This is State Senator Tony Huang. He represents the 28th Senate District here in the state of Connecticut. Senator Huang, how are you this morning or this afternoon?
I'm great, Steve. I would never stand you guys up. It's always a pleasure and honor to be on.
Yeah, we had three people scheduled for today, and you're the only one that showed up. That's okay.
I'm lucky.
We can deal with it. No, actually, I should say we're lucky to have you. And unfortunately, this is not a great topic, and it's certainly not a topic that is fun or funny to laugh at. We here in the state of Connecticut, while the rest of the country seems to be benefiting and doing well in this economy, the state of Connecticut just can't seem to get moving again. And there was a report at the Yankee Institute by Mark Fitz that talked about how our fiscal solvency ranking plummeted after the 2015 tax increase, and we still are just bouncing along the bottom with so many economic indicators. Why do you think that is? What's happening here in Connecticut that's keeping us from getting moving?
Well, as we're in the throes of election season, there's a lot of reasons why, and there are a lot of solutions abound. But one thing is absolutely clear, and it's indisputable. The facts are clear. The state of Connecticut is in a malaise. And when you see the rankings and the statistics that reinforce the challenges that people have, and these are real, because when you talk to people up and down Main Street, there are significant and grave concerns about what the state's future looks like. And these numbers reinforce. And I think they're buttressed by three major factors, in my opinion. I think the first one is the lack of jobs and the promise of business growth. We, as an indicator, have not been a business-friendly environment. We have not really recovered from the 2008 financial debacle, and reinforced with the fact that, as a state, we create so many taxation challenges, regulatory challenges, permitting processes, and it's not just the GEs and the United Technologies and the Sikorskys of the world. It really is about small, mid-sized businesses that feel the pressure of competing in a national, if not international, marketplace, but are unfortunately bound by very parochial, overreaching, and oversaturated regulations and guidelines that forces businesses to not be able to compete in this state and leaving our state. So when we don't have jobs, we don't have business growth, we then hurt the people and our communities by increasing property taxes, by increasing income taxes to make sure that we fulfill the commitments of businesses and our community in need. You know, the critical roles of government, that is, being able to provide for those that are most at risk and vulnerable, our seniors, our veterans, educational needs, our roads and infrastructure. Those are important things and important role of government. But when we don't have vitality in jobs and we don't have growth in our businesses, you're going to tax people. And we have seen since the last 8 years of the Molloy administration, plain and simple, taxing people is not the solution. We need to grow out of our problem, and cutting it is not simply going to be enough.
There was a report in the New Haven Register last week that talked about a speech that was given by Mr. George Ratiu, I guess is how you pronounce his name.
Yes.
He's the director of quantitative and commercial research at the National Association of Retailers. And I referenced this last week, and the point I was making is, look, our governors and our government can tell us whatever they want about, you know, our population and our migration statistics, and we're losing money, we're making money as far as the people moving in and out of the state. I even heard someone comment at the recent gubernatorial debate saying, well, you know, somebody said that, I think it was Mr. Stefanowski said that we have a net migration loss of people out of the state. And somebody said, that's not true. Our population has been going up for the last 45 years. And it turns out that, no, that's not true. And my point was, this guy speaking for the NAR, the National Association of Retailers, he's a realtor. He's got to tell the truth to his members. He's got to have accurate information because people are basing their businesses and their lives on that.
Well, Steve, when you talk about communities that I represent and you talk about a very flat if not a declining real estate, residential real estate market. It's a real concern. Yes, are there affluent homes in the district that I represent? But then there are real struggles of people that bought their houses 30 years ago and see that property as their single biggest investment, decreasing in value, combined with increasing burdens of local property taxes, income taxes from the state, high energy costs, insurance costs. People are being driven out of the state. So what you saw from the National Association of Realtors economists, Mr. Ratu, is this. The state of Connecticut has a net migration loss of population. And what that also means is the fact that we are driving out people. And one of the data that came out maybe about 2 months ago was the fact that in addition to that out-migration, there is a tremendous income disparity. You're looking at the out-migration of people leaving our state making in the excess of $100,000 plus, and the in-migration of people that are significantly lower income level. What you have is a flight of individuals that are business owners, that are contributors of tax revenue, but even more so that we feel in our community, these are civic-minded, philanthropic individuals that help our nonprofits in the community. Our migration is real, and it's also looking at the variance of people that are leaving. And number two, we also talk about the fact that commercial property, Mr. Ratu in that speech also talked about that normally in this booming international as well as national economy, businesses that make a lot of money likes to be able to acquire real estate, commercial real estate, as kind of a hedge into what the market looks like. And the state of Connecticut has fallen behind in that area because of some of our archaic laws and regulations. For example, brownfields are great opportunities for redevelopment in urban and some of the rural and suburban communities because of our industrial manufacturing past. But one of the statutes we have is you can't sell that property and use it if you don't take care of that remediation. And it's been bogged down in regulations. We have prime real estate in development opportunities that have set fallow for tens of years because of regulation and not being able to be innovative and being responsive and efficient to creating economic vitality. So we've got to think out of the box in solutions. And I think that's the most exciting thing for me as a legislator is the fact that we are at a crisis point where we can't talk about it anymore, and we can't go to our corners on the right and the left and say our way is better. As we saw in the bipartisan budget the last two times in overriding this governor, the legislative body representing the people have to stand up and work together to find solutions and create businesses. You know, it was almost 7 years ago when after the crisis, the fiscal crisis, we came in as a bipartisan body and created the jobs bill that gave apprenticeship credits to businesses to help train vocational technical people, to give small business express programs. That was almost 7-8 years ago, and we created advanced manufacturing training facilities at our community colleges. That bill, to this day, Steve, is a model of helping businesses succeed in this state. We've got to get out of our own silos and get together and just start creating solutions, because what's at stake here is the quality of life and the economic vitality and sustainability for our state, and in return, the real confidence that people have in staying in our state and contributing to it.
Well, you and I were talking before we came on the air about the other downstream effects of this kind of problem, and that is home sales. You mentioned just a really shocking statistic about homes in Weston.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you have it in all of our towns, but obviously property valuations are different in various municipalities. You had talked about some of the pricing in Waterbury. But the bottom line is people do not have confidence in the state of Connecticut's predictable and sustainable future to plop down payments and buy and invest in their real estate for their homes in the long term. And it's shown by potentially double-digit price drops in certain markets in Weston, as well as different areas throughout the southwestern Connecticut region, because people do not have confidence, because government has not inspired a predictable path to success in addressing our pension liabilities and addressing our tax and spend prioritization policy. People talk. People plan. Businesses plan. And when state government doesn't offer any confidence, and it's not just about business, Steve. When we zero out educational funding for communities for no other reason than the fact that they think they can afford it, it hurts our kids. It hurts our teachers. It hurts our town's ability to plan properly. So bottom line, state government has to lead in predict in providing a predictable, sustainable government. So people from municipalities on down to people's dinner tables can say, this is what we can count on. We can't count on anything from state government other than the fact that it's a tax and spend without any discipline. And I hope that we have seen and heard the people and recognize we cannot continue the tax and spend.
You mentioned the zeroing out of the education funding. And what I talk about quite a bit here on the show is the concept of incentives. And when you incentivize certain behavior, you end up getting more of that behavior. And one of the things that zeroing out of the educational funding to some of these local towns, basically it incentivizes bad behavior because it looked at these cities and towns that actually did a good job of controlling their spending and handling their budget and spending their money wisely to the point where they weren't having financial difficulties. They weren't having these economic problems. And those were the towns that got punished for that.
Yeah, I mean, having been involved in local municipal government, the level of accountability, the level of responsiveness, the level of civic involvement, not only from the municipal government, but also our Board of Education, but also parents, as well as teachers, is really a kind of a 360 encompassing system. And what you have in some of the challenges that we have in a lot of the performance district concerns is the fact that we have not had a visionary plan to say that each community has unique needs, that each student has unique needs. And I've always railed against this, Steve, is the fact that for far too long we have taken a top-down approach to education from Washington with No Child Left Behind, the Race to the Top, and various other programs. We're driving policy from Washington down and then from Hartford down to our local municipalities. You've got unfunded mandates that is dictated by state that has no relevance in different communities. So the bottom line is the top-down approach has never worked in education. What we should do is listen to the teachers, listen to the administrators, listen to the community leaders that understand the unique aspect of each community and each of the educational needs within those communities and addressing them, because the bottom line is this. We want every single child to succeed, and education is a pathway to success in academics, to economics, and ultimately to self-esteem. We've not done a good job in having the widest achievement gap in our state, in the country, because we have created many different ways of doing things driven by the top down. The bottom up is the best solution, and we also need to encourage municipal and civic engagement in our educational processes and also personal accountability. One of the bills that we were extremely disappointed that the governor vetoed was that for disruptive behaviors and students that may pose threats to our valued teachers in the classroom and their fellow classmates. We allow some local municipal input and Board of Education input to say, let's find different solutions for that child that is creating such disruptive and potentially dangerous behavior to other students and teachers, let us have a local input to say how we can help and give resources to that child. It passed in a bipartisan, almost near unanimous basis in the Senate and the House, Steve, and the governor vetoed it. This is what I mean. Let the people who know education, that know our needed critical services for those at risk and vulnerable in our society, our seniors, let's go from the bottom up and listen to these experts rather than people sitting up in Hartford telling all of those people that live it every single day that we know what's best for you.
Speaking with State Senator Tony Huang, he's with the from the 28th State Senate District. And while we're on the subject of education, then maybe perhaps I can ask you this one question. The idea of regionalization and sharing of services and resources between towns has comes up every now and again, and it's certainly a subject that comes up in Hartford. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that that's something that should be looked at?
Well, in a lot of the smaller extended communities that you have, you are already seeing collaborative regionalization in group purchasing powers, shared services. But one of the things that we have to acknowledge is we have 169 towns in the state of Connecticut. We have a very parochial and localized aspect of local government with boards of education. When I talk about local input, there are also natural patterns of communities. I represent a community of Easton and Weston, which has a regional high school that encompasses three towns that provides a high school, and it has succeeded incredibly well because there's shared services and resources. The students get a tremendous diversity of interactions among peers as well as educational resources. So it has been done. What you're seeing a pushback is the fact that you're looking at county governance. You're looking at, again, a top-down enforcement of what is best. I think our local communities are seeing that it is important and necessary to collaborate and develop regional collaborations. Again, I think it is much better to have our local inputs put together and collaborate than for Hartford to tell us what is in their best interest. Hartford does not represent the interests of the community. And the top-down doesn't work in education. It doesn't work when you're looking at regionalization as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, I keep looking at these reports that come out week after week after week, and we always see where Connecticut is just not seeming to be able to get out of its own way as far as dealing with these problems. And all the proposals, all the things that have been tried have not worked. And it just seems to me that, you know, if we want to continue bouncing along the bottom here on all these reports, we'll just keep going down the same road we're going. There's got to be some radical structural changes, I think, in how we run this state.
Because I will tell you, Steve, we can't afford to continue as usual. And people will say, well, what have you done as a legislator in creating solutions? And I'm very proud to say that the last two cycles, with an 18-18 tie in the Senate, we have been able to finally stand up to this governor and to say that when you arbitrarily zero out education, it's unacceptable. When you continue to pick winners and losers in businesses, it's unacceptable. When you continue to punish hardworking small and mid-sized business owners and say that they're wrong, it's unacceptable. So what you saw in the past legislative session, where a bipartisan solution occurred, where legislators, Democrats and Republicans, stood together and say, we need to solve the problems. We now need to continue that. The fact that three of the Democratic senators that voted for a Republican budget that showed discipline and fiscal constraint and prioritizations and not tax increases on the backs of already struggling people, two of those three individuals chose not to run for office. You need that kind of badge of courage that says, we're here to serve and represent the people that elected us. And people have said to us, you need to make hard decisions. And do not discount experience of making these hard decisions. We have a lot of people that are running for office that are shouting change. But when you have demonstrated no experience to making these very hard decisions, in which somehow you're going to make some people happy, you're going to make other people unhappy, that is the price of leadership. That is the price of representing to the best of your ability in decision making. You can't be a Monday morning quarterback and say, I could have done this, I could have done that. You weren't there. And we have to give respect and valuation for my colleagues on both sides of the aisle that have worked very hard, made personal sacrifices to serve our community. You may disagree with certain votes here and there, but the bottom line is, I would applaud both sides of the aisle and people that have served our state in the General Assembly. They at least deserve the consideration and the courtesy.
Well, Senator Huang, it's always a pleasure to have you on the air. I wish we were talking about more positive subjects here and not having to have these discussions as often as we do. But I just think that so many people just don't believe that we are where we are, and they don't believe there's any way out. And I have to disagree with that mindset, because I think we've seen what doesn't work, and we need to stop just repeating those same mistakes. So I want to thank you very much for coming on the air with me today, and hopefully we'll get you back again real soon.
Steve, it's always a pleasure to be with you, and you're right. We are at a crisis point, but I'm an optimist, and I'm encouraged that we can get to work. We live in a great state with great, great people. Let state government get out of the way and let these people succeed and prosper. Let's get back to what made America so special and what the state was known for, and that is people making a positive contribution in their community, in their businesses, and in our old state.
Appreciate your time, sir, and we'll look forward to having you back soon.
Thank you very much, Steve. Have a great day.
You too. Take care. That was State Senator Tony Huang from the 28th District.